Welcome to the Before Midnight podcast, coming to you from Frankfort, Kentucky. In this podcast, we explore the world of age group triathletes. We'll be looking at the real world challenges of being an amateur multi-sport athlete. I'm your host, Linda Word, along with my co-host, Brian Schenkenfelder. How are you today, Brian?
I'm phenomenal, man. Who's not? It's a good day. We got sun, man. That's the important thing.
I know. This like glowing thing is in the sky. I don't know what to do with myself.
Yeah, I was coming home from swimming, and I was like, oh my God, I'm blinded by this ball in the sky. What the hell is it, and why is it in my way?
I guess it was Thursday when it first came out, and I was like, wait, where are all my sunglasses? It has been so long since I have had to use sunglasses, and I needed them. I'm like, I'm going to have to hunt.
Yeah, fortunately, I have sunglasses in my car. I got a little sunglass holder, which is really nice, because I can just leave them there, and when it's sunny, I can come out and go, oh, I can put sunglasses on. It becomes a real problem when you swim at 5 in the morning.
Yes.
Because it's dark.
It is dark.
There has been times when I've like showed up into the pool with sunglasses on my head at 5 in the morning. It's like, this is for after swimming. So I can get home without
I promise
being
I didn't
blind.
Drive all the way here with this. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. No, I guess the other morning, it was Thursday morning and I swam. Was it Thursday and I swam? I don't know. And coming home, I was like, I really didn't swim very well on Thursday. I was kind of mad at myself, but I was like, oh, look, a pretty sunrise. All right, the day's better. It's just all better, at least for now, until we get hot.
No, I'm ready for the hot. I'm already ready for it to be warm. I'm already dreading going out and biking the 50-degree weather that we're going to have here the next week or so.
Are you going to go out and bike this week, you think?
Most likely, yes, because I can generally ride in the afternoon. So I'll go out for probably like an hour. I won't go out for very long, but I'll probably go out for an hour and tootle around the area and come back. It's much more fun than the rollers.
Yeah.
I really have gotten to the point where I have no desire whatsoever to use a trainer or rollers. It's just not fun.
I mean, I like my trainer. It's one of those things that, oh, it's right there. I can do it anytime. Well, so you procrastinate and never get out there, but it's like, okay. And whenever I do it, I never regret getting on it because it is a lot of fun. I've got the Garmin Tax and, you know, it's always a challenging ride. It's always fun, but it's like, oh my God, it's cold or whatever just to get out there. But I'm thinking tomorrow's going to hit 57. So I was thinking about putting the wheel back on my bike and at least for the day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I generally ride on the rollers. It's just a matter of taking the bike outside. I don't have to
equipment
change.
You don't have any. Yeah, I've got an equipment change. But,
well, if I were gonna use a trainer like that, especially like the Tax where you have to take the back wheel off, I would put one of my other bikes on there and just train with one of my other bikes. Because I use my cyclocross bike in the winter.
I know a lot of people that like put their gravel bike on their trainer, but my only other bike I use to lead races. So, and I do that more in the wintertime than a road ride. So,
yeah,
I think it'll be worth it tomorrow though to actually pop it off. I bought.
Well, it's not that hard to do.
No. And I've got a chain. I bought one of those chain lift things, and that makes it a little easier and less greasy. And I also don't have to. I bought another cassette for the back.
Right.
So I don't have to worry about that. I didn't have two cassettes before, so hell no, I wasn't going to change things.
That's right. You got to have a cassette for the trainer, right?
Right, yeah. Right. So now I have, you know, I've got that set up. So now it's really not that big a deal. I just got to do it. So I may do that this afternoon so it's ready for tomorrow.
Yeah. Fortunately, I don't have to do that. I just have to take my bike out, pump up the tires, and go. I generally don't inflate my tires nearly as much indoors. I should. Doesn't matter on a smooth surface.
Oh,
I just forget.
Okay. is there a reason behind that?
No, I squeeze them, and if it's like close, I just ride. Okay. And then I'll try to do it next time. I'm just lazy.
Okay, you said it, not me.
Yeah, if the pump's there, I'm more likely to pump it than if I have to go hunt it down. But usually I'm just tired. I don't look forward to riding the bike indoors, so I can't get excited.
Yeah. I get that. Tax is fine. I mean, I know a lot of people that do Zwift and they compete, and so they get into it. But then Tax is just now figuring out how to do that kind of competition thing on their trainer. Like right now, if I'm riding, I can see other icons of people that are riding the same route as me.
Yeah.
But let's say it's a friend of mine or something. It's really hard to kind of sync those things up. So they're working on improving that.
Okay.
So you can all kind of start off at the same time, even though it is video. The other big thing they did, it's video. And so you're like going down the road and sometimes, you know, you don't know what's coming up, if there's going to be a sharp left-hand turn or whatever. And I have not fallen off the trainer, but I've gotten very surprised by some of those turns. And it's made me actually pretty sick sometimes. So I started doing the video where I'm just looking at my little dot going on the map.
Do you now have to actually like turn, or do automatically turns for you?
So you're holding straight on a road, and then all of a sudden
it turns.
Everything turns to the left, and you're like, yeah. Oh shoot, you know. So your body naturally wants to follow, and it's like, okay. And then so now they've got a flyover view, which on some of the videos, which are really like, it's like a drone doing it.
Okay.
And so that's, I really like that. So I'm trying to find more of those routes. So they are definitely making it interesting.
I mean, I guess that maybe that would be more interesting. Maybe I'll have to buy a trainer at some point. I don't know. Maybe that's more interesting. Maybe that'd be more, I don't know. I just don't know.
I mean, you know, if you competitive, you know, people really get into the Zwift. I see that on Strava all the time.
Yeah.
You know, people get,
I mean, I guess you're competing. I don't know. That doesn't interest me.
It's like the Peloton stuff. People get all excited. Oh, you know, I'm up there in the ratings or whatever, rankings.
But, well, I mean, yeah. I mean, that was the whole point of what's that app that tracks your best times up hills and stuff? The phone app, the web app.
Zwift? No. Strava?
Strava, yeah. That's the whole point of Strava.
Okay.
You compete against other people.
And see,
and then
in
people
Zwift,
just come and hunt and take your hill, and it's like, okay.
Well, in Zwift, they do have segments. And actually, in Garmin Tax, there are some, too. I can make segments. I just don't.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I wanted to, I'm only competing against myself, so I don't really care. But there are a few segments on some of the Garmin stuff.
Yeah, I got off Strava when I ended up being, like, middle of, you know me. I go out and ride into random areas. And I'd take, like, I would take a hill out in the middle of nowhere. And this one guy in Frankfurt, like, rode to that hill, got it, and then came back.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, dude, man, I don't need to be on this.
Well, that's how you got me a whole bunch of my Queen of the Mountains. It's like, no other women have ridden this.
Over here, yeah.
And I've still got a bunch of, because I mean, a lot of women still haven't ridden this.
Yeah, because they're out in the middle of nowhere. But, like, this one guy in particular who was faster than me, he, like, found all the hills I had and went and took all of them. I mean, he just, like, literally rode to the hill and then back. That's all he did. That was his ride.
There's some really obnoxious people on Strava. It doesn't seem to happen so much to people of my level, but when it comes to you, and that there's another gentleman that I know that he's like, yeah, I'm not on Strava anymore because somebody was copying my told me they were going to copy what I was doing for training for this race. And he was like, no.
Yeah, I could see.
Figure it out yourself, you know.
I could see that. Like I said, I left a bad taste in my mouth, and it was a guy, like, I'd met him once or twice. He was just kind of a whatever. He was an interesting person. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. I know a lot of people who just have their settings on private, and they just, you know, so it's still on Strava, but nobody else can see it.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't understand. I don't need it. I've got Garmin. All my data's on.
Yeah,
Garmin.
You've got Garmin, so
it's all good.
Yeah, it's kind of pointless. Anyway,
duplication.
All right. So tell me, your son's basketball career is taking off, I hear, at least his team.
You know,
they did well.
It's crazy. They've won 4 games in a row now, which he plays for Good Shepherd, the Catholic school here in Frankfurt. Even though he goes to the Capital Day, they kind of merged a team together. But they've won 4 games, and that's like the first time it's happened in like 20 or 30 years for Good Shepherd.
Do they have a new coach?
No. They've got some kids, like my son, who've not played a lot, that are athletic. It's beginning to come together. Because, like, probably one of the better players on the team, he's tall. He's a good 4 or 5 inches taller than my son. So he's a pretty good-sized kid. And he's big. He plays his football's his primary sport.
Okay.
He's athletic, aggressive, strong. And so he's the center. And then they've got a bunch of soccer kids Like my son.
They know how to run.
His friend, another kid who's the point, one of the other point guards, he plays for the GFC team with my son's friend. And then they've got another kid from that team plays. There's four soccer players who are in like the top seven players on a team. And so there's some athleticism there. And they're getting old enough that they can start putting things together. So dribbling can be put together. My son's kind of the defensive specialist on the team, which isn't surprising. He's just very defensive oriented in general.
Yeah.
So he does very well there. I mean, we were at the game, and last game, they were – the kids nowadays, these fifth and sixth graders, can nail three-pointers. I mean, a lot of them – not all of them, but there's a handful that are just really proficient at it and are good. It was kind of funny because I remember, like, Alex's first practice, the coach was like, we're going to play 2-3. If they want to shoot threes, we're going to let them. Now that's become, okay, get out on the three. Get out on the three. Stop the shot. After getting burned by just one team. Hit, like, seven or eight of them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no, I mean, they were, like, 30, 40% from out there, like, lighting it up. And my son in this last game, you could see him. He was... They're in the 2-3 zone, and his kind of task with getting out there and getting to the kid. And you can see the ball starting to work its way around to the kid, and he starts working his way out and gets the pick, which was awesome. But, I mean, that's just like awareness of the defense and where the ball is going to go and getting there. He has another teammate who subbed for him a little bit later in the game. He didn't see it coming out. He got out there, but it was late, and he ended up fouling the kid. He could get three free throws and made 2 of 3. But that's the difference between someone who's like, you know, really understands defense versus a kid who's going to hustle and do good defensive things, but just doesn't see the game the same.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing my son does, a very good job of like seeing the game and kind of reading the flow of a game. Mm-hmm. A lot of that's probably from soccer because he's a defensive player in soccer and that's what he does. It's been interesting. It's been wild. It's been good to see because now we've got... Yeah, these are a bunch of sixth graders that are fairly athletic that are pretty good. I mean, they've got a point. They've got two guards who can dribble. They got some forwards like my son who are okay, not great scorers. And then you got your big kid in the middle who can score points. He's a pretty good shooter. I mean, he's a really athletic kid. And they're doing well. They're basically winning on defense. Well, most of it's defense. Awesome. They're just shutting people down and winning these close games because they can't score themselves.
That's awesome.
Because my son, he only has 4 points in the season. But he is the, when it comes to late in the game, he gets their best player.
Yeah.
And keeps him from scoring. It's pretty, it's fun. It's been good for him. And I'm not going to say he's got a future in basketball. He's nowhere near that. This is a parochial league, and they're not very good, which is great because they all can play. You don't have to be a great athlete to play, which is what can happen in some of the public schools. You have to be really good to get any playing time at all.
Yeah,
or
to
even
get
make
in
the team.
Because there's just,
here they just take everybody and roll with it. And you know, my son's gotten to play. His starter gets to play in all the games. And he's not going to be a basketball player. That's not where he's going to play in high school. He's not that good. But he's good enough to play in this league and make an impact for the team, which has been great because this allows him to play a second sport. I'm a big fan of multi-sport.
Yep.
The more sports you can play as a kid, the better. Yeah, and it's like there's so many things between basketball and soccer, too, that translate to each other. So some of the skills he's learning in basketball, like the pick and roll and things like that, these are applicable to soccer. In soccer, you don't have pick and roll, but you have kind of like a give and go, where I pass to somebody and I make the run and they pass right back, which is the same concept as a pick and roll. It's just done with passes instead of one person picking off the other person and making that second pass. And it allows him to kind of... I think it allows him to get more defensive reps in, too, than he does in soccer because it's a faster-paced game. Well, I'm interested to see how soccer turns out after this season. Like, my goalkeeper on my team, he plays for him. He's not as athletic, but it's been good for him to play because his hand-eye coordination is getting better. He's my goalkeeper. I kind of need that to get better here in the spring. So I'm excited about that, too.
He gets to hold on to the ball.
Yes, he can actually catch it instead of just knocking it down.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm excited about that. But basketball's been it's been fun. It's been a joy just to, like I said, my son gets to play and he's not just sitting the bench, which I don't think he'd do it if he was.
No. He'd be like, Dad, get me out of here.
Yeah.
So that's been fun. Nobody likes to do that.
Like I said, it's in a league that's, it's probably the equivalent of like a rec league, but you know, each team's got a couple good players. That's how the parochial schools have like a good high school basketball team. You got these eight schools and you take one or two off each team and all of a sudden you've got a pretty good basketball team.
You get a good team.
Yeah, you're just picking and choosing. But none of the talent's centralized at any one school, and therefore the games are competitive.
That's awesome. Well, good. I'm glad he's liking it.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. All righty. Well, we were going to talk about your book a little bit. Okay. Kind of did an overview of it last time, like why you wrote it. So let's get into the nitty-gritty of it.
Okay.
So you started off the book talking about the problem. That's chapter one.
Yes. Yeah.
And sort of the purpose of the book. So let's dive into that a little bit. Right. What is the problem? Well, and, you know, let's not talk about me because that's a really long podcast.
Well, one thing I noticed when I coached amateur, these middle-of-the-road athletes, I don't have a lot of history with, like, the super elite athletes, but when you train average athletes to do well, I noticed that when they were like coming off an injury, I noticed then they were like, we're just going to do this race for fun, that they would have one of their better races. Have you ever had that happen to you? Where you just did something for fun and it was one of your better races?
It was a 10K in Louisville and like everything messed up. It was one of those kind of deals where I thought it was the wrong race. There's a series of three races in Louisville. And for some reason, I thought the 5K and the 10K started in the same place. They didn't. So for the 10K, I was like a mile and a half away from packet pickup where I parked. I'm like, oh my God. So I was like going to go to packet pickup, pick up my stuff, and then go back to my car, which luckily I at least had the right shoes on, but I was wearing a coat. I didn't have my headphones. Nothing was the way it was supposed to be. And I was like, oh, well, this is what it is. I just don't have time. And I'm just going to run it and it's going to stink and whatever. I had the best time. And I actually had one of my fastest 10Ks ever because I took the pressure off. It was like, well, this is going to stink. So, and then ended up, I was trained well enough that it didn't matter. I was nice and relaxed and just had a great time. And yeah. Then I can't remember what my time was, but it was years ago. But yeah, taking the pressure off, taking all the numbers out of the game.
You know, and this syncs with what we know about flow, right? Because what is flow? I mean, we talk about flow. Can you give me a definition of flow? What's flow mean to you?
Flow means to me is I'm not, everything's just clicking.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have to think about it. I'm just rolling. You know, if it's a race course that I'm real familiar with, it's like, okay, boom, boom, boom. I used to have this in horseback riding too, where I show dressage. It's always the same pattern that you ride. And it's like, okay, boom, boom, boom. This is how this is supposed to feel. It's done. All right, next step. And you just don't have, you know, it becomes automatic is automatic. There's no hesitation of, oh. Yeah.
You were on fire. That's what we'll say in basketball or sport. He's on fire. And the technical term for that is the flow, right? And it's technically defined as what? The being hyper-focused on the moment, i.e. you're executing without thinking of things outside of what you're doing right now. If I'm doing triathlon, I'm focused on the bike. I'm riding the bike. I'm looking for, you know, am I going to be shifting here in a second? Is this where I need to get a drink of water because we're going downhill? I'm thinking about executing. I'm not thinking about anything else within the sport, nothing external. I mean, that's what we talked about with Saban last time, is like, that's how he had his great game. It's like, hey, we're going to play one play at a time. And then at the end of the day, we're going to forget about it, move on to the next thing. And we're not going to worry about things that are external to our particular success. Mm-hmm. Then I was exposed to the philosophy of Stoicism, which is an interesting philosophy because it's based on a couple major themes. One is, for you to live the good life, you need to be the best person you can be at all the time. I.e., you need to be diligent of what you're doing and focus on being that best person. I.e., you know, there's where we are as individual peoples. There's the perfect person that we would be if we met like our full potential. And we need to find that. We're trying to close that gap. And that's kind of the purpose behind Stoicism. And they have like the four cardinal virtues. You know, to be a good person, you have to have wisdom, justice, courage, self-discipline, which is all great. But what we're trying to do is trying to become the best version of ourselves. So for us to have a good life in Stoicism, you have to live with character, or be the best person you can be at all the time. And I kind of...
That sounds exhausting.
Yes, it's very difficult. I mean, that's not something that's easy to do.
Yeah, no.
But if you can do that, then you can accept whatever the results are because what we did our best. Right? If I'm doing the best I can at all times, then I can be happy with the results because I couldn't have done anything else. I did couldn't the best with what else. I yeah. did.
Yeah. You're not going back and going, oh, no, I should have, yeah. Should have said this, should have done this.
Right. And so the other...
Put my shit in a different place in transition.
And so the other side of that is okay, if all we need to have the good life is to always live to the best of our ability, which is challenging and something we'd always have to do, then things that are outside of that are really not important for us to live our good life. You know, God, nature, whatever it is, gave us reason. I mean, that's what separates us from the animals, right? Our ability to think and apply rationally to things. And so we need to use our rational self to reach the potential that nature, a God, whatever higher power you have, set out for us when we were born. Because, you know, there's this plan of, you know, we've been given this potential. We're like a seed for like a tree. If everything I need is inside of me to be the best and live a good life, then everything else is unimportant. So now we can look at what they call control. Control what you control. That's one of my favorite phrases. Control what you control. Well, what is it that we can control if we apply this? Well, I can control my thoughts, and I can control how I respond to the rest of the world. Everything outside of my control shouldn't be anything I worry about. It shouldn't be anything I care about one way or another, because all that's going to do is bring me misery. Why would it bring me misery? Well, it could bring me happiness, but it could also bring me misery. Why? Because I can't control it.
If people are thinking great things about you, can bring me happiness. You're a turd. It doesn't really matter. But it's actually a lot of, you can't control what other people are doing or what other people want to control.
Right. And so
how you react.
So my thought in all this was to modify some of the, in the first part of the book, I'm modifying some of these basic tenets of Stoicism and applying it to triathlon. So now we focus, our problem is we're focused on things that are outside of our control. We're focused on results. You know, our goal is to get this PR. Our goal is to do whatever I need to get a specific race result that I want.
I love the one, I want to be in, I want to... in my age group. Well, it all depends on who shows up, honey.
Again, things that are outside of our control. So when we're setting up goals, we should be setting up a goal of like, okay, I want to be the best triathlete I can be at all times. What can I control if that's the case? Well, I can control how I respond to the world around me. I can control how I deal with each aspect of racing. If I'm racing and the guy in front of me kicks me in the face and knocks my goggles off, what can I do? I can get mad, which is going to throw me off my swimming, and all of a sudden I'm angry, I'm wasting energy. Or I can just go like, oh, it happened, let's get back to swimming as quickly as I can and maintain an even keel. Because we really can't control anything else. I can't control results. I can't control whether I win the age group. If the world champion shows up in my race, probably not going to win that one.
Yeah, pretty doubtful.
Yeah, I can't control what my time is going to be in the race. What if I get a flat on the bike?
Yeah. What if it rains?
Yeah. What if it rains? What if it rains? What if it's 90 degrees out? I've raced in 90 degree weather. You're not going to run fast in 90 degree weather. No. You're not going to have a PR run in 90 plus degree weather. It's just not going to happen.
No.
We can't control the weather either. So if we care about these things that are happening around us, we're basically at the whims of fate on whether or not we're happy. And as such, we can't stay in the moment because we get pulled out of the moment because, oh my gosh, I have goggles got kicked on. I got a flat tire. It's 90 degree weather. What am I going to do? It's raining. What am I going to do? So now I'm not in the flow. And I think this is a big reason why your don't care races usually end up doing so well. Because I'm not focused on things that are outside of my control. I'm just focused on running, having a good time, trying to enjoy the race, trying to do whatever. And as such, I perform better because I'm not disturbed by things that I shouldn't care about. It allows us to enter that flow easier, which generally leads to good results, but it doesn't always. But the thing is, if I go out and I become the best athlete I can, and I can go out and compete day to day and give my best effort, regardless of what the course throws at me, what my competitors throw at me, I can live with the results. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have anything to regret. I did what I could. And our problem as athletes is we get so focused on results that are out of our control that we're easy to throw off our game. And the problem is that most of the mental training that triathlon has is based around the idea of belief. So when things go wrong, I believe I'm going to get back on track. I have so much belief in myself as a racer that I'm going to win no matter what the course throws at me, no matter what is going to be thrown at me. The problem for us age groupers, the people who are not professional athletes that aren't getting paid to race. I mean, I'm not getting paid to race. Are you getting paid to race?
No.
Generally not.
I pay to race.
Yeah, you pay to race. The problem is that our lives get in the way too much. I mean, when was the last time? I mean, how often do you have perfect training weeks where something doesn't get
What is that?
You know, I have a 12-year-old son. How many times do you think I go out, when we go out to eat at some place that has good food?
The last time I actually felt my training was right on point was I had left my job and it was like working part-time job. I was able to actually follow the training plan to the T, and I ended up having a wonderful, wonderful race. But those circumstances have never happened previously in my life, and they will probably never happen again.
Yeah.
So it was one of those times. It's like, okay. Every other time I just have to accept what's going on.
Yeah.
Work around it.
So our problem is we're focused on results, which we can't control. Our training is generally not good enough for us to really believe we're going to have the good race. I mean, I'm not talking about like bravado, like, yeah, I'm the best. No, this is like a real belief that you're going to win. When Michael Phelps got up on the blocks to swim, he believed he was going to win. That's why he won all those races in the Olympics by like a tenth of a second, because he believed that he truly was going to win and he was going to do whatever it took to win. None of us have that. We can't. I mean, how are you going to believe you have your best training when you went out and ate McDonald's last night? Come on.
Yeah.
Or, you know, your family had pizza on Friday night. You ate, you know, a half a pizza or a full pizza or something like right. that. You know, that's not going to lead to good results. And you know, you have to stay after work so you didn't get that training in this week or whatever it is. Life gets in the way. Traditional training just doesn't work for us. But my other side of this is, since we're not getting paid to race, if we change how we look at racing, we can actually do better on average. It's much easier to get into the flow. If I change my perspective from I need to have this result in the race to I'm going to go out and do this best I can, I'm going to go out and work on the skills I need to get better, mm-hmm. it's easier for me to get into the flow because I'm not interested in results. The results are going to be what the results are going to be. All I care about is that I am getting better in the sport, and then when I go out and race, I'm going to take what I learned in training and apply it the best I can. Mm-hmm. Professional athletes don't have that luxury. They need the result. They have to have the result. They get paid based right. on the results. So they have to work on belief. They have to have that good training. They have to go that route because they need the result. I don't need the result. I need to use that for my advantage. And if I can get away from focusing on things I can control and focus on the things I can control, I'm going to get better and I may get those PRs. I mean, I want the PR. There's no reason you wouldn't want it, but that's not going to make or break my season. And like, what's funny about it is that how many races do most people, especially traveling, how many races do you do in a season? I mean, when I was at my max, I did like 9 or 10. Most people do 4 or 5.
I was going to say 3 or 4.
3 or 4 or 5 maybe. Especially if you're doing long
distance. Now, when I was running, it was... Whew. you know, running is a whole different ballgame. But
right. But like in triathlon, you're going to race, what, 4 or 5 times a year, especially if you're distance, if you're doing longer stuff, you're not going to race that many times. So you're going to base your whole season on 5 data points? Really?
Yeah.
I mean, how much training are you doing all that time? There's a heck of a lot more data points in your training than there ever is in racing to learn if you're going to get better. And then the other problem is like, if I'm so focused on getting this result, I stay too focused on fitness. I don't focus on technique enough. That's the other big problem I see with most of these people who are focused on results. It's all about trying to get that little bit fitter so I can squeeze stuff out, rather than how can I be a better triathlete? Can I get better on the bike? Can I get my handling better? Can I run with maybe a little bit better technique? Can I swim with better technique? You know, if I change my thought process away from results and focus on technique, or focus on being the best triathletes I can be, now my focus for training broadens, actually. Because I got fitness, which is one part, but I've also got skill development. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge part of triathlon.
Oh,
you can gain a lot of time by working on skills, especially on the bike, man. I see all these people that have these $10,000 bikes with all this aero equipment, and they can't make a turn. All the time they gained, that 5 or 6 seconds of time, 10 seconds of time they gained from having that super aero bike, they lost on that corner to me. Because they had to slow down and brake, and I took it at 25, 30 miles an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so we can work on skills. You know, I can get better at climbing. I can get better at descending. I mean, there's a lot of skills that can be done on a bike. And the same thing's true for running. I mean, there's descending skills, there's climbing skills, there's form. Swimming is all about form.
Yeah, it is. Yep.
Yeah, so this whole first part of the book about me is like, how do we bring about, for lack of a better term, Nick Saban's process to amateur triathletes? And that's kind of that was the goal of the first couple chapters of the book, if that makes sense.
Very cool. Yeah, no, it does. It does. I mean, it's, we're not, you know, like I said, we're not professional athletes. We're not getting paid. We don't need, you know, it's an activity that we all enjoy. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing it, I hope.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no one gets into triathlon to win their age group.
Yeah, I mean, you're doing it because it's something to do and it's fun and, you know, fitness, whatever, and it's just different. And I mean, I like it so much because it is built-in cross-training since you got all three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it keeps things interesting. I agree.
Yeah.
You know, but most people get in for weight loss. They get in for fitness, general fitness. They like doing, you know, these activities as kids, swimming, biking, running. I mean, those are like, isn't that what you did as a kid?
Yeah.
That was your whole childhood, wasn't it?
What we did. Yeah. I mean, when I first, I started running, it was like, oh, I love running, but if I keep running like this, I'm not going to be running very long. I need to do something else. And, you know, it's when I was like, oh, biking and swimming. All right. Well, here we go. Did my first triathlon on a hybrid bike.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. I mean, so people, as they get into the sport, they begin to lose track of why. And that's the other aspect of this is, can we get back to the why? You know, the why is I want to be able to play with my son when I'm advancing in age to the point where he's much more athletic than me. I have to try to keep up. I mean, right
You're
now I'm still better
bike.
Than him, but I mean, yeah.
But
in 5 years, that's no longer going to be
shrinking.
True. Yeah, by the time he ends
close.
Up, by the time he's a senior in high school, yeah, he'll have well passed me, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But I need to be able to keep up. I want to be able to do things. You know, hey, we can go biking. Well, he's still active and young and can do all those things. I want to be able to do them as well and try to have fun with it. And that's the thing, is you got to keep that in mind. If you keep the bigger picture in mind and not get so hyper-focused on a particular result, you can race better. I mean, I know I've had my best races have all been when I get out there and don't look at the data on my watch. I'm just biking. I'm staying, usually found somebody I chase. And then on the run, like, I remember my best races. I would be running. I'd go out in about the first mile and I would just look at my pace just to see what it was. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And I just keep running. I never looked at it again. You know, and here I am running like a 44 something 10K or 45 minute 10K, which some of my best runs.
Yeah.
I'd never done that before. But once I got away from looking at it and, oh my gosh, I'm not going fast enough or whatever, it's like, just do your best. You know, the results are going to be the results are going to be. I mean, nowadays when I get frustrated with results, it's not the actual race that bothers me. It's the, I didn't prepare. and I know I didn't prepare. And that's that's a frustrating thing, because you're going out and racing after doing work for a good length of time, and you're not able to do it at a decent level just because you've various life things that got in your way.
Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, that's one of the challenges, to accept that those life things are going to happen and figure out where you're, I don't want to say your new normal, but, you know, where that level is going to change. It's like, okay, everything's going great. This is going to be great. And you can get in flow much easier. But then, you know, this happened, this happened, this happened.
It's
tough.
Know,
okay, I mean, so my
tough.
Level's down here. And it's hard, you know, it's a tough pill to swallow. You know, when you know when you know the potential is there and you don't reach it, it kind of, it gets annoying.
It is, it's tough. And it's hard to block out the externals. I mean, that's why there's philosophy around it, and you spend your whole life trying to to master these concepts. They're not easy, you know. The scoreboard is ingrained in us. Everything is about the score. You watch sports, it's about the score. You watch whatever, any type of competition, it's always about the score. No one just talks about the technique outside of like ice skating.
Yeah, and gymnastics.
Gymnastics, yeah. The sports that are graded
maybe some,
on random person judge.
Downhill skiing, jumping, or something. I don't know.
Yeah, the judge sports are the only ones that are on that, rather than. But most sports are score based, and it's deeply ingrained in our culture. So I get why people care about PRs and things like that. It's hard to step away from that, and it's going to take time.
Yeah.
I still haven't mastered it.
Yeah.
I was upset in my last results. Yeah, but
I remember.
I get over it though. It doesn't. While I might be upset about it, it doesn't affect my training. I don't go into a depression. Like, I remember, you know, you have these bad races, you're at the end of the season, and you spend like a month just stewing on it, and just like, and you don't really have any motivation to get back out there. I remember those days. But,
well, especially if it's one of the last races of the season, and it's like, crap, I don't have another opportunity to fix this until next year.
Yeah.
That's a long time to wait, you know. I mean, I work with preschoolers, and 5 minutes is a long time to wait. The rest, it's 5 months, 6 months, 8 months. Ugh.
So
it's hard.
Yeah, for me, I like, there's the initial disappointment in races. I generally get over it pretty quickly and just get back to training, because I try not to let things that I can't control affect my training or desire to train. So it's a challenge. It's never easy. It's a really cool concept. It's probably the better way to do it. But like everything, sometimes it's easier said than done.
I guess I'm at the point in my athletic career where everything is different. My whole body is different than it was. And so I know reaching those expectations, you know, I don't know what the new normal is yet. So I don't have any expectations.
Well, and that's the other side of it. As you age, you're going to decline.
Yeah.
In performance.
Hey, now my swimming is getting better, but that's because it's technique.
It's a technique.
That's the one thing. That's the one thing I can do. I know I'm not going to get to be a faster runner. I know I could probably be a stronger biker and probably get some more skills, but swimming is really where I'd make the most gain. So that's what I can control, and that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, I mean, to get older or get faster at an older age is usually a result of you haven't reached your peak capacity. You're still on your way to peak capacity, like swimming. You know, I can probably still get a little bit faster in swimming just because I haven't necessarily reached my peak capacity for that sport. But eventually, you're running and stuff like that, you will have heat and you're going to start going backwards. My big problem is I took a huge step backwards. I'm racing some of the worst times of I've ever raced, which is why I'm trying to get back into it and get a little more serious and try to have a season where I get good training and see, because I'm interested to see if I can get, I'm not going to get back to where I was, and that's fine. I don't have a problem with that, but I would like to get back in the neighborhood of where I was. I'm okay with declining performance. I just, it shouldn't be this steep. That's where I'm at right now. But like I said, I'm trying to work through that and just be the best I can be and try to keep these things that I can't control, which are results, out of my area of concern.
Yeah.
It's a work in progress.
It's always going to be a work in progress. And then it's over. No.
Eventually just die, and life.
Yeah.
Game's
over. I don't know. I want to be that 102-year-old woman or whatever that just broke a world record in swimming.
I think that's just going down to the other side of the pool and back. Those ages, you break the record. Yeah. There's not a lot of...
You can get... She got on the starting block and dove off. I was like, oh my gosh, she's going to break in two.
Break bones in the process.
Like, oh my, just landing in the water. But yeah. No, she did it. So.
You just have to be able to keep going and not have things that keep you from doing that.
Yeah.
Again, yep. So much of that's outside of your control.
Correct.
Which is kind of the purpose of stoicism is don't focus on those things. Just do the things you can and accept the results because you gave your best effort.
Yep. Good things to ponder. All righty. Well, hey, we managed to do 3 podcasts in 3 weeks. I'm very proud of us.
Yay. If you've enjoyed this episode, hit the like button. Give us 5 stars on Apple if you're listening there. It helps us. The ratings and things help us continue the podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, hit the like button, subscribe. Heck, doesn't matter. Whichever service you're using, subscribe for future content.
We love it when you download us. That's awesome. We can keep track of that because Brian is all about the numbers, just not the race results. Oh. But join us again next week. We will be here again.
Yes.
And, have a wonderful week if you want to.
If you want to, exactly, man. It's a choice. It's always a choice.
Well, I want to. I want to enjoy this sunshine this week.
Let's go. Let's get to it. I'm ready. Let's go. Let's go.
All right.
I'm ready to go on bike right now. Let's do it.
I know. Let's go. We got time. You guys have a great week, and we'll see you next time.